Hello and welcome to the United Uncovered podcast. This week we're joined by a very special guest. Brian Robson made 461 appearances for United, scoring 99 goals. He was club captain, Captain Marvel no less, winner of six major honours and renowned as a Reds legend and idol to a generation of fans around the world. Brian was famed for his fearlessness on the pitch, and this week he attempts to beat an opponent that comfortably overshadows any of the midfield hard man he's met as a player. He's climbing Mount Kilimanjaro to raise funds for the Manchester United Foundation as well. In recognition, we're dedicating the entire week of features to Robbo on ManUnited.com and the club's official social media channels as well. We'll discuss Brian's feats as a player and his enduring relationship with Manchester United as a club ambassador as well. I'm David Stowell from MUTV and I'm joined by ManUnited.com's Adam Bostock and Adam Marshall as well as, of course, Mr. Brian Robson too. Welcome, of course, to you.
That makes it easy, Dave, doesn't it? Two Adams.
Yeah, indeed. So it's great to have you here, but I mean, we must talk about your United career shortly, but first of all, what a challenge this is, Kilimanjaro. You're looking forward to it?
Loads of people have said to me, have you ever climbed a mountain before? And the answer is no. So it's not really climbing, though, it's trekking, isn't it? Which is a little bit different. But I'm really looking forward to it now. Over the last few months, I've been thinking, what have I got myself into? But now that it's getting close to the day when we leave next Thursday, I've met the people who are going on the trek. There's about 28 other people going with us. And it's for a great cause, and that's it. But it's going to be a great experience.
Is it like being back in your playing days with all this training? Has it been going?
Oh, you're saying hardest opponent. This probably will be, because I've heard that the weather over the last couple of weeks has been sort of like minus 15 at the peak. Then you've no toilets, no electric. You know, you can't have a shower. So it's going to be a bit messy, but I'm surprised, because out of the 28, you know, there's about 10 girls have signed up to go up there as well. So it's difficult enough, I think, for blokes when you don't have showers and all that sort of thing. So, you know, the girls, it's going to be interesting for them.
Is it a case of being Captain Marvel all over again, sort of rallying the troops and leading everyone up the mountain? Is that how it's going to be?
Maybe it's the first couple of days, it might work out that way. I'm not so sure how I'll survive, though. But the thing is, I think the trekking and the mileage sort of over the days, I don't think will be too much of a problem for myself, because I still go running, and I do maybe it's 3-4 mile every other day if I can. So that's not really the problem. I mean, the thing which all the medical people talk to you about is dehydration and the high altitude. That's the main problem which people feel getting to the peak, you know, because of the altitude. But I've played, I know it was many years ago, but I've played at high altitude and it didn't affect me too badly. But I know it's hard work when you don't get as much oxygen as you would like it into your body. So like I say, it's all going to be interesting, but for a worthy cause.
And a familiar face by your side as well, a friend and former teammate.
Yeah, Kev's been hammering me for about 3 months when I talked him into coming up with me. He's going to me, because we'd had a few pints, and I said, yeah, you're as strong as an ox, you can do this, absolute no problem. And so anyway, he bought it. And so it'll be good to have Kev. He's good conversation, good crack. You know, so for all the hours that you're going to be together, you know, through the day trekking and then the campsites on the evening, I know that I'm going to have good banter with him.
Well, best of luck to you and, of course, to Kevin Moran as well, and everyone else going on the trek. And I know that we would like to talk to you a lot about your playing career. The guys here at part of ManUnited.com are obviously going to be celebrating Robbo Week, if you like, aren't they? So, I mean, let's start talking about the early career then.
Yeah, I remember when Brian signed as well, and doing it on the pitch was a spectacular thing to do. I wish we could do that again, maybe, when we make signings. How did that come about, when the actual sign on the pitch? Whose idea was it?
It was definitely the chairman, Martin Edwards' idea. I was a little bit embarrassed about it and said, you know, can we not just do it, you know, a bit quieter, let me just sign the contract and watch the match. But the chairman had it in his mind that he wanted me and Ron to go out on the pitch and sign in front of the fans. I think it was to give the fans a bit of a boost, you know, like £1.5 million transfer fee. they weren't publicised to the fans that they were trying to make a real go of it. That's it. But the strange thing about that one is I always look back on it, and all the media on the Saturday morning were all about Brian Robson signing for Manchester United, and Sammy Mack will be on his way out. And we were playing Wolves on the day, and I'm sitting in the stand, and I'm looking up. I can't remember who I was actually sitting next to, but United are winning 5-0. Sammy had scored a hat-trick, and I'm going, friggin' hell, I'm going to have to be some player here to replace Sammy. And so after the game, I can always remember saying, congratulations, Sam. Like, I says, thanks very much. Like, there's no pressure on me now, is there?
What I love about the signing, though, I've seen the video a number of times since, is you hear Big Ron saying to Brian, you're joining the biggest club in the world, you know, in a very sort of Big Ron dramatic way, you know, and it just sort of summed up, I guess, him as a flamboyant manager. He was trying to sell to you the idea that you were joining the world's biggest club, which is certainly true now. I don't know if it was true at the time.
Well, did you notice anyway, you know, the gold pen? Aye. That was obviously Ron's. But yeah, I mean, it was a great moment for me because I just felt West Bromwich Albion at the time was selling the best players. And I wanted to win things. It's okay making money in the game, but you want to win things in your career. And when they sold Laurie Cunningham to Real Madrid and then Cantelo to Bolton, I just thought that's two of our best players. And I thought they were going to build on something at West Brom because we were not a bad team at that time. So when I heard of Manchester United's interest, it was a no-brainer for me. Like, you know, and I know I had to kick up a bit of a fuss within the club, but I just said to them, you're selling the best players, and you know, I've got ambitions and I want to go to Manchester United because they were one of the biggest clubs even then. I mean, we probably are the biggest club in the world now because of our fan base and the commercial aspects and then what we've won over the years. You know, so we're definitely challenging the Real Madrids and the Barcelonas. So, you know, it was the right choice for me because I had a great time here. And, you know, I moved in 81, and even though I've had manager's jobs around the country, you know, I've always kept me home in Manchester, and that's sort of where my family have been brought up.
And of course, in sort of hair terms, you were the original Marouane Fellaini, weren't you? I mean, you know, it seems odd that I'm bringing that up, but...
yeah, there's not so much there now. But, yeah, that was all the craze in them days. And I think it was a few of the Liverpool lads, really, who got me into Graeme Souness and Terry McDermott. They had it. And I used to go for a pint now and again with Terry McDermott, so it was a bit of an influence from them.
In terms of sort of lasting memories of you as a player. I mean, you guys pick out sort of some of your favourites, if you like, and see sort of how they rate with Brian's.
Yeah, I mean, there's obvious ones like the goals, and the goal against Liverpool was one I always remember, the semi-final, the FA Cup, the long-range one, the way he just sort of took it so early. But it's not just the goals. I mean, there's things like the tackles as well. I remember Brian doing, he used to sort of dominate the game from the first whistle almost. If they had a danger man, you'd snuff him out and very quickly put in a hard tackle. And so it's the whole package, isn't it? Not just the goal scoring, but the whole midfield work.
I mean, on the tackling side, it just came natural to me to sort of go right through the ball and right through the player if the player was somebody who I thought was kicking one of my teammates or being aggressive towards me. So that part and parcel of the game, and at least we could get away with it in them days. I think the biggest one I can remember, like, where I got away with it was Norwich City down at Carrow Road, and I sort of belted one lad, went through him, and then the ball was in, I'd slid in, I had to get up, and then I belted the next lad, and referee blows for a free kick because it was a bit two-footed, the second one, so I don't know how I got away with it. But I think both physios had to come on the pitch because both of them needed treatment. So that was a bit of the tackle side of it. Goal, I definitely agree with you. You know, I do a bit of after-dinner speaking, and I always say it when we played Liverpool in the replay down at Main Road. That goal stands out for me, you know, because it just fitted. It was one of those where you make your run. I could sense somebody was going to catch me. I think it was Mark Lawrenson. And I just thought, it's one of those where you've just got to hit it. And Thankfully, it just went flying in the top corner. So, you know, it's a great memory.
There's a commentary line from Brian Moore. He says, and Grobbelaar couldn't even smell it. I don't know why he would need to smell it. He's just got to see it. But I think he got a hand to it, didn't he, Bruce?
Thank goodness he didn't.
He'd get a finger to it, but
Even on goals like that as well, though, it's important that the team win. You know, there's no point in scoring a goal like that and you go out of the competition 2-1. So, you know, it's nice to be able to score in big games like that, but you actually win it.
Yeah, I mean, for myself, Brian, I think your team, the team that you were captain of, you know, synonymous in those days with the FA Cup. I mean, as a 10, 12-year-old, I vividly remember watching the replays on Thursday nights, you know, Top of the Pops at 7 o'clock with Dexys Midnight Runners and Culture Club, whoever it was at the time. And then 7:30, the replay came around and we had those two great nights in the early 80s. And I'm imagining they are fond memories for you as well, those nights at Wembley lifting the cup.
Well, they are the great memories because, like I say, that's the reason why I came to United, because I wanted to win trophies. And, you know, I thought I could win medals by coming here. So in 83, it was great to, you know, play in the replay against Brighton, win the game 4, score a couple of goals, get brought down for a penalty. So I had a big say in the game. But there's nothing better than picking that cup up and, you know, you get the medal and you've got something to prove what you've done in the game. So that's great. I think the unfortunate thing, not just for the lads who were good players in the 80s, it was probably a little bit unfortunate for Ron Atkinson as well. I just feel that the squad wasn't big enough and in-depth wasn't big enough to compete for the championship. And that's why, I mean, we go off to a great start. What was it, 85 or 86? When we go off to the start and we win our first 10 games, you're thinking, here we go. But I can always remember John Gibman broke his leg, Gordon Strachan dislocated his shoulder, then I ripped my hamstring playing for England and I was out for 6 weeks. And Norman Whiteside had a knock to his knee and he was out. And so trying to replace those players, that's when we just started to dip a bit going into Christmas because the squad just wasn't quite strong enough where Liverpool's was.
Is that where the winning of the league title eventually was so big, not just for the club here, but for you personally, because you'd been chasing it with United? Is that the trophy that stands out for you, or are there others?
Yeah, 92-93 definitely is the standout trophy to win. Samat was still part of the club, seeing his face after 26 years not to have won the title. And it was becoming a ball and chain around everybody's neck. It was for the fans, because the Scousers are ribbing you all the time that you've not won the title for 26 years. And so it was just great just to sort of cut that shackle away and everybody could concentrate then on just enjoying it and trying to get more success at the club.
If we were doing this podcast back then in the early 90s, obviously people would be saying, what on earth's a podcast? But if we were doing it then and we said to you, as the Brian Robson who was playing for United then, this is what United will go on to achieve in the next 20 years or so, would you have believed that?
Yeah. No, you couldn't possibly have. I mean, Sir Alex, I mean, he had this vision of that's what he wanted to achieve with the club and with the squad of players. But to go on and actually achieve what he achieved is incredible. And that's why he will go down as probably the greatest club manager there's ever been. You know, and rightly so, because he didn't just sort of build the squad of players and the team to win the title. He actually went into the youth development and developed that as well. And that had a big part to play, you know, sort of in the mid-90s, you know, onwards then, because of all the great young players that came through the youth system. You know, so he did that, and then you look at Man United now, where they are to when I played. You know, you have Cliff training ground, one pitch, and our little bit of Wembley, which we used to call it, up at the top. A little gym where probably the whole squad of players couldn't go in the gym at the same time because there wasn't enough room. Now you go to the Aeon training complex and it's just fantastic. I mean, all the equipment and the setup of it, the security that goes around it. You know, it's incredible the way Sir Alex helped to build the club.
we must sort of move on and talk a little bit about the present day, really, and what you do now, because you're still very much part of the club. How do you find your ambassadorial role and the jobs that you do in that context?
I really enjoy it. That's why I don't go back into management at this moment of time. I'm not saying I never would go back into management because of certain things which I miss about management. But then there's other hassles around running a club that, you know, after 12 years I was in the game as a manager, you just think, I'd like a new challenge here rather than have the hassles of what goes around management. But then I look, and the enjoyment part for me is I'm still involved because the boss used to allow me to go to the training ground so I could watch the lads train. Dave Moyes has told me I can go in there anytime I want. So that's great for me because that keeps me involved and still meeting people like Scholes, Ian Giggsy and them. But then you've got match day, and so every Saturday at Old Trafford, you know, I work with the sponsors, meet and greet, which is a pleasant job. You know, you're just chatting away to people about football, you have a few photos taken, sign some autographs, maybe do a little bit of Q&A. So it's all enjoyable stuff, and you're watching the game. So I go away quite contented on a Saturday because, you know, I'm a Man United fan. If somebody had told me at 14, 15, I would have supported somebody else other than Newcastle, I would have went, you're mental, no chance. But because of the years that I've had at United and the way the fans have been with me, you end up being a Man United fan. So I get enjoyment that side of it. And then I've always enjoyed travelling the world as a player. I used to love going to different places. Family holidays, I've always sort of selected to go to different places rather than the same place all the time. And so my role now gets me to go and do all different types of things, whether it's press conference, whether it's coaching clinic with the kids, you know, or dinners, just to welcome partners on board. You go and you see, you know, different parts of the world. One of the best trips I've had, I must admit though, was going to Santiago with Concha y Toro. And you go across there with a wine company, you wine and dine in the best places, and a bit of a game of golf with some of their clients, nice meals. So that's why I enjoy the job.
Great stuff. I guess we've all got memories of different United captains, haven't we, around here? And you know, as an ambassador, you look down from the stands and you watch on as someone leads United out. I mean, what do you think makes a great skipper?
I think the main role is to lead by example. You know, your attitude week in, week out, of how you go about playing the game, whether it's, you know, everybody can't be a tough tackler. So I don't mean that way, I just mean the endeavour that you put into a game, because everybody can work hard. So you've got that side of it, but I think there could have been, at this moment of time, quite a few real good captains within this squad of players that we've got. But I still feel that there's a few of them are still too quiet. I can see Rio has come out of his shell as he's got more experience and he shouts. So Nemanja is a bit of a talker on the pitch. But I think people like Michael Carrick, you know, could have been a better, he could have been a captain because he's an intelligent player, he reads the game well. But Michael gets on with his game, and I don't know whether it's because he maybe looks and thinks, I don't want to upset anybody. And so he doesn't really shout and dominate as much as I would like him to. And you've got a few of the other lads who, you know, the player, their own game, and they play really well because they're all top players, that's why they're at Manchester United. But they could have just motivated themselves a little bit more to being leaders. And I think that would have made them better players, and, you know, they would have got a chance to be a captain. Because when you look back, you know, I suppose I don't know what it was because I always liked it at school, but I was always a motor mouth on the pitch, like, never shut up. So that's why everybody made me captain, I think, as you come through. Keane, he was exactly the same, just naturally had to shout at people because it's just a natural thing that you do. Paul Ince was very similar, and Brucey was. And then Schmikes, I'm not quite sure what Schmikes was like, but he got the captain's armband. He used to shout, but we couldn't understand a thing he said.
Do you think the captain's role is as important now as it was in your day? I mean, is it as key as it was?
I think it's key because what I took on board, and I got this from West Brom, because I went in with a lot of experienced players at West Brom, and I was the only young player who came through, and so I was knocking about with experienced players all the time. And they were really into team bonding. In it, whichever way it was, whether you went to the pub for a pint or a restaurant for, you know, a bite to eat, race course, golfing, they always went about it in that way. So then every couple of months you would have to have this bonding day. And so when I came to United, you know, I always thought that was a great idea. And so you tried to take that on board, get the lads to mix together off the pitch. So then you get to know each other that much better. And the lads took to it, and everybody really enjoyed that type of bonding when we did. And then even the boss took it on when I left. He always made sure that his captains did that. Now, that was, for me, that was your role as a captain, to make sure that they'd go on these bonding days. Didn't matter whether you said no, you didn't want to go, you had to go because you're a squad. But then you could go home whenever you wanted to, as long as you'd been there for an hour or so. And I always thought that was important, because if you're friends off the pitch, you'll maybe give each other just that little bit more when you're playing on the pitch and look after each other better.
Yeah. Well, fingers crossed that's what the current squad do, I guess, this season, isn't it? Sadly, that's all we've got time for. But Brian, it's been great to talk to you. Thank you for the two
great.
Adams
Thanks
as well.
Very much,
Adam Vostok, Adam Marshall from ManUnited.com. Don't forget, you can stay tuned, of course, to ManUnited.com, at ManUnited on Twitter and the club's Facebook as well, Google+ and Instagram, for more Robbo-related features this week. And if you'd like to make a donation and support Robbo in his climb of Kilimanjaro, then visit justgiving.com/RobsonFamily. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.